The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozell Live by Dr. Tom Rozell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozell. Indeed, we're live. Unfortunately, it's a little drizzly outside, kind of cold and damp. So guess what? You need to be here listening to this. Don't go anywhere. Pay attention because we've got some really, really great information that you need to kind of, you know, think about and apply and ask yourself a question. Do I fit the model? So what am I talking about? Well, we're talking about brain health. Is the status of your brain, the cognitive capacity, as strong as it was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, last year? And for many of us, we're going to take a look and say, maybe not so much. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older. Well, maybe not so much as that. But you know what? We're going to explore this with somebody who probably knows more about the brain than most people I've ever met as far as functional capacity, what happens to it, what its susceptibilities are, and but more importantly, how to fix it without having to drug it up. Who am I talking about? Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. Hey, Harlan, welcome. Good to see you again.
Good morning, Tom. Great to be here.
It's, you know, this is an area that I have some very intimate feelings about, considering a year ago, actually this last month, I took a double gainer and hit the ground and ended up with a pretty significant concussion. But, you know, you really don't understand how impactful small injuries are. Things that take place where you butt your head against something, or even the progressive decline because of biochemistry within the body. And, you know, we put that together. We see people say, well, I'm just getting older, or, you know, I don't know why I can't function like I used to function. It could be at any age. You know, how many people in our society do, you know, have these types of conditions? Not ones that are diagnosed necessarily, but people who have subtle conditions as well. How would you add that up? What does it look like, really?
Well, you know, I certainly think it's probably underestimated. You know, we often come up with these catchy terms like having a senior moment or brain freeze or that type of stuff. So, I think a lot of folks have expressions of you know, cognitive or memory decline, even in their early 20s and 30s, and they just write it off as just, you know, something that's, you know, in the background. It's not that big of a deal.
When you start seeing forgetfulness, when you start seeing loss of certain types of perception, are those normal, or is that the flag that says something's going on?
Well, I don't know if we want to use the word normal. I think we probably would want to use the word common. And there's an issue I have with making those terms synonymous, because now we're making conditions that we typically see that aren't normal. So there is a lot of people who have symptoms like this, and it's kind of common, but I certainly don't think that that's normal. So we want to look at it from a different perspective.
But let me understand that, and I want our listeners to understand that mental decline doesn't have to be. They should be just as sharp from the moment they enter the world to the time that they leave the world, given the right platform. What happens to us that begins to show up as, oh my God, I don't have, you know, all my oars in the water like I used to?
You know, typically what we see is you know, a combination of maybe some structural insults, the slips, the falls, the concussion stuff that, you know, we've talked about that you've had in the past. And certainly there's a lot of biochemical changes that happen, blood sugar irregularities, producing too much cortisol, the person who's in chronic stress syndrome, that's probably the fastest track to getting cognitive decline. And, you know, I also throw in there just sleep deprivation. There's just a lot of people who get very poor quality sleep. So the brain doesn't have an opportunity to heal and regenerate during the nighttime. And that's when it does all those things.
Sleeping is critical. And most people, you know, give it lip service. They don't realize how important it is. The brain goes into different wavelengths, if you will, that resets itself. And as you and I are talking right now, we're in something called a beta wavelength, and we're going back and forth. But going to what you said, stress goes into high beta, and there are certain times that's important. We have to have a certain fight-flight reaction to be able to defend ourselves from the stresses of the world or things that we have to be singularly focused on. But if we stay in that too long, that's when the brain begins to degrade and the nervous system begins to break down. How come people aren't sleeping? Is it simply because of all the electronics we have out there, or is it the lifestyle, or is it dietary patterns? Is it chronic pain? What is it?
I'd say all of the above. You know, and I would also throw in there's a lot of people who are apneic. There's people who have apnea. They don't sleep well because they don't keep an open airway, or their brain tells them, that they don't need to breathe. So, I mean, there's all of these different combinations, but the end product is people get very poor quality, deep sleep, deep REM sleep. And that's when, you know, the brain starts to wash itself. The cerebral spinal fluid and the lymphatic system in the brain basically bathes it and cleans it over the course of the evening. So as our cortisol levels stay high, or maybe they flip and invert and we have kind of an inverted circadian rhythm, cortisol is high at night and low in the daytime, then it makes it really tough for us to get quality sleep. And then the end product is, you know, our neurons and our connections start to get broken apart.
My guest today, the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning, we're talking about brain health and the things that, you know, we don't even notice. It catches up with us over a period of time. We forget where we put things. We walk into a room and we wonder why it's there. But more importantly, sometimes it's just disorientation and the loss of our normal neurological capacity because something's happened, but we forget it's a cumulative. It's a stacking event over a period of time. We're here at 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Love to talk to you on this topic or anything else. If you think that, you know, oh my gosh, something's not working the way it's supposed to, well, here's an opportunity. This week's presentation, Dr. Browning is going to be talking about brain health. You'll be able to get that online by simply going to RoselleCare.com. That's RoselleCare.com, RoselleCare.com. Register for it. We'll send you the presentation. And for those of you who check it on, there's going to be a very special gift for you, an offer, if you will. There's a test called BrainSpan, which will measure the inflammatory pathways within the brain and tell you how much potential damage might be coming down the road or how much might be existing now. And there'll be a significant discount for first-time visitors to the Roselle Center, but we'll lay that out and we'll let you know, how that works out for you. Dr. Brown, let's get back into the topic because this is one that's really important. Let's talk about the insidiousness of trauma, brain trauma. Does the brain remember injury or does it dissipate over a period of time?
No, it definitely remembers it. We develop what we call engrams, which are these encoded chunks of memory. It's the reason why a great basketball player doesn't have to be looking at the basket and he can put the ball up and score. It's, you know, it's the reason why we can recall things from 25 years ago just by hearing a noise or smelling a smell. You know, these things come back. So there's these engrams that we develop, but unfortunately we can also develop negative engrams. So that would be like a bad habit, you know, like a person who's always chewing their nails or, you know, those types of things. So the body and the brain have a way of communicating and encoding that memory into the brain for long term.
So, you know, back in the day, there was a term that they used to use for fighters. It was called punch drunk. You know, over a period of years, they started slurring the words. They didn't have the mental sharpness, and they said it's because they got hammered in the ring. Can that hammering occur on a very subtle level to virtually anyone? Can people end up where they don't have the cognitive associations that they used to have and not be as articulate, not being as functional neurologically because of small injuries becoming, if you will, punch drunk over time?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about traumatic brain injuries, one of the components is something called diffuse axonal injury, which means that we're basically taking these nerves in our brain and we're overstretching them by having small little trauma here, little slip there. So we do that over and over again, and these nerves, they get traumatized and they might not regenerate fully, or they regenerate with poor quality tissue. So we start to slowly see the signs of that, which might be, like you said, something as simple as just being forgetful, or maybe we don't smell as well as we should, or our mood state. That's a biggie. A person becomes more irritable, because remember, the brain helps us control our emotions as well.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up. You know, so many people have been, oh my God, I have COVID because I can't smell or taste anything. But I'm wondering, not only COVID, but how many people suddenly realized that they couldn't smell or taste anything anyway because they had brain injury that they, you know, just kind of put up with, and it was a slow, insidious decline. But as you said, because of injuries, traumas to the head, a fall, a car accident, and so forth, people can actually lose the capacity to smell or taste anything.
Absolutely. And you know, you see this pattern quite a bit. And certainly folks just want to write it off as not being a big deal, but it's an early sign. It's kind of a check engine light that's coming on to say that, you know, we better figure out what's happening before the brain starts to really break down.
You know, it's unfortunate that we put up with things, and we hear the term all the time, what do you expect for your age? But, you know, there's patients in our practice that they're in their 80s and their 90s, and they're as sharp as somebody who's 17 or 18 years old, and their brain says, you know, I'm still functioning on all cylinders. And then there are people who are very young, and in their 30s and their 40s, and all of a sudden you start seeing forgetfulness. You start seeing lack of tactile processing. What do we see? What's the cause of aging? We'll talk a little bit about trauma, but what else leads up to that presentation?
You know, certainly chronic inflammation in the body, a skewing away from the anti-inflammatory, what's called eicosanoids, the good fats. You know, the brain and our nerves are wrapped by a lot of cholesterol and good fats. So as those fats become replaced with more inflammatory fats, then the communication becomes impaired or it even slows down. So inflammatory markers are a really good indication that something is on the horizon. So like we were talking about with the brain span test, we can measure those things. We can see exactly the levels of inflammation that are going on in your body. And also we can look at markers that indicate maybe that our blood sugar regulation is not conducive to healthy brain function. And I'm not necessarily talking about a person who has a high blood glucose or a person who has a high A1C, which are very valuable as well. But there's other markers that can tell us if the brain is getting enough of the gasoline it needs to run.
And we don't realize how important that is. And sometimes we feed it things that it shouldn't have. The brain needs certain chemistries, and we get them from certain presentations. We're here at 888-630-9625. Give us a call. Love to talk to you. My guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about your brain and brain health specifically, something that we all worry about, particularly as we get a little bit older. But there's so much more to the puzzle than, you know, just you're getting old, and it's very preventable. And we're going to talk about that as we go through the program. And that'll be our in-house presentation, actually still online, but we're coming up close. We're going to get you back in. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. This is an important piece. It's something that we deal with so many different patients. We'll be right back after some very important presentations. Don't go away. Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, we are. A little gloomy day outside, a little cold. Not very typical of our metropolitan area in Washington, D.C. This is more like where I grew up, in south of Buffalo. I remember Memorial Day weekends where there was actually snow flurries, but you know, that's why I moved down here. I was trying to get rid of it. My guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about brain health. You know, those 6 inches or some a little smaller between your earlobes, that computer that runs everything, and what happens to it when it's not taken care of properly or it's impacted and there's trauma, whether it's from an accident or whether it's, you know, you got in a fight when you were a kid. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that with the expert, Dr. Harlan Browning. Welcome back let's get into this a little bit deeper, because this is something, you know, whether it's Alzheimer's disease or progressive adult onset dementia, which I want to get into in the second part of the program and really break that down a little bit more. But we talked about the commonality of dementia. Question is, do we see more of it today than we have in the past?
I don't know if we're seeing more of it. I think we're probably diagnosing it sooner. So it would seem like that there's more. I also think that there's a commonality that just people are just not as healthy as they used to be. So, you know, there's all these complicating factors. You know, it's very odd, and you've been in this business twice as long as I have. You just don't see people over the age of 65 that much that don't have several comorbidities going on, that don't have diabetes, that don't have elevated cholesterol, that don't have heart disease, that, you know, on and on and on. So, you know, all of these morbidities are very, you know, harsh on the brain. So, you know, we have vascular events that happen on, and we just don't know. In other words, the blood vessels to the brain maybe are not getting the nutrients to where they should be. So, you know, things start to scale back, and we show the signs of early dementia.
So we're talking about the wonderful standard American diet biochemically, and the inflammatory pathways that it starts kicking in. You know, we saw so much of that over the last year and a half through COVID, and that, it, you know, you get this cascade going. It seems to be self-perpetuating, the high inflammation, and affects the neurological system, causes the body to begin to degrade and break down. Let's go back to in the second half of the program. Again, I want to get into Alzheimer's. I want to get into dementia. I want to get into some of those things. And by the way, we're here at 888-630-9625. So if you have a question specifically about this, or you get a little nervous about things that are starting to happen to you, this is an opportunity. Give us a call. You also have the presentation to go through this week. It'll be online. Go to rozellecare.com and register for it, and we'll be happy to send it to you. Lots of information. Dr. Browning, we talked a little bit about cumulative injury and trauma. People have a tendency, particularly if you're a guy, suck it up, you know, learn to live with it, you're fine. If you get hit in the head, you bump your head. But, I mean, life is life. We all have those things. Just because we get hurt doesn't mean that we're going to, and we hit our head, doesn't mean that we're going to have a potential dementia later on. And if so, and we'll get into the second half, can anything be done about it?
No, and absolutely not. I mean, the body is pretty darn resilient, and it can take a heck of a lot of abuse and bounce right back. I think what becomes the underlying issue for most people is they're not only, you know, hitting it from, no pun intended, from the structural side, but then they have all these other influences going around them that just makes them more susceptible. Again, the classic pattern would be the person who just eats so much refined sugars and carbohydrates, so they're so acidic and they're so inflamed. Well, if the brain is slowly smoldering, okay, and then we start to get all these injuries on top of it, it's just not going to heal. You can't rebuild a house while it's still on fire. I mean, you got to put the fire out before you start remodeling it. And for a lot of people, their just inflammation just goes on and on and on.
And that's the hardest thing for most people, is to change habits, things that they do, their comfort foods, if you will, the amount of alcohol that they drink, in today's world, you know, the drugs. Let me ask you a question. Right now, we're seeing a huge amount of application of CBD oils. And this is, a patient asked me the other day, I was walking through the hallways, and, you know, they grabbed me and said, listen, you know, I want to ask you, my husband is taking a lot of CBD oil because he's got, you know, a mind that wanders all the time. And I'm concerned that he takes too much of it, that he's going to go the other way, that his brain's going to start causing problems. So we know CBD, there's a receptor site in every cell in the body for its utilization. Is there a problem with CBD and neurological function that you're aware of?
You know, I don't know if I know enough about the long-term implications of its usage. I guess what we would have to ask ourselves, similar to opioid receptors, and I mean, they're similar in that there's this lock and key mechanism. If we overwhelm the opioid receptors by taking a lot of opioids, you know, prescription drugs that mimic that, then it can change our blood, our brain chemistry. So I'd have to look closer at the literature on CBD. And I think we're still pretty young in the game here. So we might not find out about the effect of it for another 15 years, especially if, somebody starts taking it when they're in their, 20s or 30s because they have a chronic low back problem or they have anxiety or, sleep disorders, whatever you want to look at. But, I think time will tell and let us know.
Yeah, it's a very interesting area of study because CBD does help so many people in a lot of different ways. But again, the end product is there something down the road that we have to be aware of? We're coming up to a break. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. We're talking about your brain. Don't go away. We have a whole lot more coming. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as you do every Sunday. My guest today is none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning, and we're talking about his sweet spot, the brain, and actually brain health and all the things that can happen and how we end up where we end up as time goes on. And not necessarily because we're getting older, it's only because we've been ignoring things that have been taking place. We're going to get into a little talk about Alzheimer's and dementia and other processes as well. But, the one thing that we want you to know is that virtually everything that we're talking about is reversible. You just have to understand the process. We're here at 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Before we get back into the program, I want to go to the phones. Barbara, thank you for calling. How can we help you?
Good morning. This is a topic that's absolutely apropos today, and it's about a brain question. Could you please tell me, in a person who's in the late 80s, she's in the late 80s, who can hear the noise, the sound of people talking. This has been occurring in the 80s and getting worse, but does not understand what the person is saying. The person is all there, is quite intelligent, etc., and has nothing to do with the COVID mask, does not have COVID. Could you say what might cause it in the brain? And the second thing, what tests do you think would help? And I don't know, anything else that you feel is relevant? We trust okay. your opinion and your knowledge completely.
All right, Barbara, let me make sure I have the question. So you want this person can hear and is a clear reception of the word, but can't process it properly relative to what the meaning behind the expression is. Is that correct?
Yes. Cannot, okay. And person is very intelligent, reads and writes and so forth, and this has come on in the 80s, and it just doesn't make sense. If you can hear somebody, you would be able to comprehend them unless your brain isn't working properly, which is, I believe, it must be declining in her.
Okay, got it. We'll answer the question. Thank you, Barbara. Appreciate it. Dr. Browning, you want to jump on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I would have a couple questions. Obviously, is this a slow progressive thing or did it come on fast? If this is something that presented in a pretty quick fashion, then I would start thinking about maybe a person that had what's called TIAs, transischemic attacks. These are like mini strokes that the person might, not know that they're having. So you can damage parts of the brain from that happening. If it's been, developing over a long period of time, then I would start to consider, do they have a whole bunch of comorbidities that are causing this? Is their blood pressure not under control? Is their blood sugar not under control? These are two big heavy hitters that will cause the brain to decline pretty quickly. If you starve it of oxygen, and you starve it of glucose, so the two things you need to run the machinery, then the person's going to have a lot of challenges.
She also asks, is there any diagnostic testing that can probably not only diagnose it, but show us that there is a decline that is starting that would give us the tools to go after something like that?
Well, with what she's describing, it sounds like it's getting sort of advanced to me. So I would certainly encourage this person to, maybe even sit with a neurologist and maybe get an MRI to make sure there's not plaquing of arteries and this type of stuff, because it takes quite a bit of trauma or dysfunction of the brain when we can't, understand what somebody's saying. We can hear it, but we can't understand. That's kind of a big deal.
that's something that unfortunately a lot of people get into. They say, can you tell me that again? And it's not because they're not hearing you. It's because they're not comprehending what you just said to them. And we see that way too often, and you're right. It can be lack of oxygen supply to the brain. It can be on a low level, can be the diabetic pattern, if you will. And it's not necessarily a diagnosed diabetes, but something that we see in hyperinsulin spiking and so forth. It goes back and forth. So there are all those things. So just to add into it, there are things, there are tests. The one test that that we've talked about, brain span, which gives us across the board a lot of brain indicators relative to inflammation, blood sugars being too high, the potential of high levels of acidity, which are going to eat the brain up, if you will. And if you know what those are and you can relate them to the dietary patterns, you can reverse that. Just before we get into a couple of the other things, how important is exercise relative to brain function?
It's absolutely essential. Not only does good things happen in the brain when we exercise, it allows us to keep those comorbidities at bay. And again, I'm going to say this a million times because it's the one thing that I see is people have all of these things going on in the background. So just by exercising, it's going to minimize the likelihood that you have blood sugar handling problems. It's going to minimize the likelihood that you have high blood pressure. And the brain thrives off of mechanical stimulation. Our joints moving and our muscles move is very soothing to the brain and to a small part of the brain called the cerebellum. And the cerebellum drives our big part of our brain. So our movement is key to our cognition. So if we stop moving, things start to change, and they certainly change in the wrong direction.
And they change rapidly. They change very quickly.
They can, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So, and you'll see that, you know, the classic pattern with a person, let's say, that is developing dementia or Alzheimer's, is they often will have a little bit of motor delay. They'll just move a little bit slower. They'll shuffle their feet a little bit. You know, you'll see these subtle changes in their motor function, because that's how intricately they're tied in together.
Yeah, it's important that people understand that life is movement. And without movement, nothing works, but particularly our brains. Your brain has to have energy. It has to have fuel. And that fuel, by the way, is the way the body converts carbohydrates into sugar, but at a very, very adequate level, not overwhelmed, because it could go the other way and cause it to degrade. So, Doc, if you were going to tell a patient that's, you know, older, you have to exercise, and they look at you and say, oh my God, what do you mean exercise? I'm too old to exercise. What type of exercise could they start that would be supportive of what we're talking about?
I mean, anything from just your gentle walking and stretching. I mean, those things are great. It doesn't need to be demanding type exercise. They don't have to run a marathon. They don't have to go lift heavy weights at the gym. It's more or less just moving the joints. I would certainly encourage them to do weight bearing exercises, standing up versus gravity, because then you're going to challenge what we call your vestibular system. That's your ability to stay balanced. So that's a key part of it too. So, you know, simple exercises, simple stretches that you can do, you know, while you're standing. There's a lot of programs out there that people can get involved with, either through their gym or the YMCA or yoga studios. There's lots of different options. People just need to reach out and see what's, you know, in their area.
You know, one of the things I've told patients to do, walking is one of them. And, you know, I'll repeat what I've said thousands of times over the years. If you go out and walk 2 miles every day, you decrease your risk of dying from a disease process by 50%. Just walking every day, same thing. And it doesn't make a difference how fast, just go walk. But one of the things I'll tell an older person to do to maintain their balance or vestibular integrity, take their shoes and socks off and start out with one pillow, a pillow that you would sleep on, put it on the floor and stand on the pillow and just kind of walk in place on the pillow. That's enough of an irregular platform that it stimulates that long track in the brain and gets you that stability that you need, and the brain responds to that. And then if they can get brave, they can do, you know, they can move on beyond that, but they should get a little help and a little guidance. But exercise is not difficult. People just got to get up. They got to get out of the chair. They got to stand. They got to walk. And, you know, even stepping up on a 6-inch platform, you know, and that's not high. Just step up once, step down. Do the other foot, step up once and step down. All those things, you know, we've instructed and encouraged our patients to do over time. My guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning, we're talking about the brain and brain health, and that's going to be the topic of presentation this week. And all you have to do to get a hold of that and to really get into the nitty gritty, and nobody better than, you know, the professor, 888-630-9625 is how you reach him right here. And if you want the presentation, you can go to our website at rosellecare.com. That's rosellecare.com. And those of you who have never been to the Rosell Center in Fairfax, Dr. Browning's going to have a very special gift for you and the presentation. This is only for people who have never been there. There's a test called the brain span, and he is going to give it to you as an enticement to do something about your mental health. Doc, let's get into a little bit about the nuances. We got to, you know, probably about 12, 13 minutes before we have a break. And I want to talk a little bit about Alzheimer's and age-related dementia. What do we see with that? Is that increasing over time? And if so, what are the triggers? What's going on?
You know, I think it is probably increasing because of exposure to environmental factors. I mean, we just unfortunately just don't live in the cleanest environment anymore. You know, there's a lot of toxic chemicals and, you know, a lot of those we put into our body voluntarily, you know, the things that we eat. The one reason I really like the brain span test is it gives us a marker of your inflammation. So the essential fats, like the omega-3 fats, DHA being probably one of the more important ones for the brain, we can measure that. We can see exactly how much of that protective essential fat that you have in your blood, which represents what's going on in your brain. So, but just simply by measuring these markers, we have a roadmap on what to do to make a change. Additionally, we can check to quantify the level of the person's maybe dysfunction. So we can look at their working memory, their short-term memory, their long-term memory. There's these batteries of tests that are involved in the brain span testing that help us quantify. And getting back to what we talked about earlier about people who are forgetful, I think I'm finding more and more that maybe people are not as forgetful as they think. They just don't pay attention. Meaning this, I'll have patients that want to do the brain span and are convinced they have early dementia. But once they sit down to do the test and are actually focused on it, they do fantastic. So to me, I think we often will overlap forgetfulness with focus, and that could be misleading.
And the brain span test is an excellent test. We've been using it now for quite a few years, and it measures not only the biochemical, as you said, and gives us the inflammatory markers and some of the other chemistries that we have to know about, but it also has a cognitive portion to it that you do to see what your current right now memory patterns are and how you're able to put together problematic situations. It's not a difficult test, but it's extremely revealing. And, you know, those of you who are patients who are at the office, you know, hook up with Dr. Browning and he can get this done for you. There's nobody better when it comes to brain function as it relates to that. You know, and to let everybody know, as well, you know, last year, a year ago, May, I had a little bit of a double gainer and I hit the floor, for some other reasons and ended up with a pretty significant concussion and affected me globally relative to my capacity to move, but also I was starting to get some cognitive pathways. But what you did for me, a lot of guidance that you gave me also got me out of it. And I'm back at a place right now where, you know, I'm just like I was before. Some people say that wasn't too good to begin with, but nevertheless, no, seriously, you know, my head is in a good place. Point I'm bringing up is that this is reversible. Doc, when it comes to, we got a couple minutes before we have to take a break. When it comes to Alzheimer's, and is Alzheimer's at this point preventable? Can it be slowed? What's your opinion? People are freaking out about it. They're really worried that they're going to come down with it.
I mean, I would say both. You probably can prevent it because, you know, most diseases can be prevented. Obviously, there's always people that have a tremendous genetic influence to certain disorders, which are going to push them in that direction a little bit further. But for the majority of folks, I mean, that's not necessarily the case. So if you take good care of your body and give it the things that it needs, minimize, you know, risk factors, then you can certainly slow these things down, and you, in many, many cases, you can prevent it. But unfortunately, most people don't do that. They take very poor care of themselves. So, you know, it's fair game that they can develop, you know, everything from dementia, Alzheimer's, to any other type of chronic disease that we see develop in an older population.
So anything that affects the brain can affect our neurological function, memory, capacity across the board. And so what I'm hearing from you is simply this, is that preventive is better than trying to do damage control later on. And if we step up to the plate, there's so much that we can get done. But the other piece is that we've talked about and touched upon is that if you're in that place, there's a lot that you can do to make a difference, that you can begin to stop it in its tracks and begin to reverse it. My guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, we're talking about your brain health, and it's going to be the topic of his presentation this week. And all you have to do to register is go to rozellecare.com. We're coming up to a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back after some very important messages.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozell. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozell live, as you do every Sunday at the same old time, 11 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Those of you who are across the country and listen to us and get to us by other means, you know the math. Get it done and let everybody know that we're here for you, bringing you the most intimate and updated information as we possibly can in all aspects, whether it's this crazy viral pattern that we've been talking about for the last year and a half, or, you know, things like today, which are, in my opinion, far more important, and that's your cognitive function, your ability to think, your brain health, if you will. Dr. Harlan Browning, nobody better when it comes to the brain. He knows his stuff. He's one of his specialties is in functional neurology. And so he's right on post with this thing and bringing you information that you can utilize. If you have the opportunity and you want to talk to him, you can call the office at 703-698-7117 or register for his class this Wednesday evening. It'll be available to you. You go to rozellecare.com. That's rozellecare.com, rozellecare.com, and register. You just scroll down, hit the registration button, tell them where you want the thing to be sent to, and it'll get done. Dr. Harlan, let's talk a little bit about the presentation. What are you going to go over, you know, and inform people on, and what are they going to walk away with?
You know, as always, I start with some real basic anatomy and physiology, because if you understand the blueprint of the way we're designed, it becomes easier to reverse engineer things that go wrong. We're going to look at some of my favorite markers to, you know, both symptomatically and both objectively in a lab test to indicate that you might be developing problems, even though you don't feel it. And then certainly we're going to go into the actual brain span testing. And the beauty of the testing is it gives us all these metrics to work from. It tells us what specifically we can do to change it. So if we do well in two out of the four tests, well, we can concentrate on maybe your issue is spatial memory. So it tells us, it's great what we can do nutrient wise, what we can do lifestyle change wise, you know, diet wise. It gives us all these indicators. And the really cool thing about the test is, you know, when I redo it, and again, I always tell my patients a lab test is only as good as what it looks like when you redo it. So you should always kind of double check after you implement some therapies. I see people's metrics get better. So it's really a fantastic test, and it does a great job to explain to the person why things are not going so well.
So not only is there a subjective, the patient says, yeah, I feel better, doc, but you have objective findings that say, yep, indeed, we're gaining here. We're moving in the right direction. We're getting this squared away.
Absolutely, because a portion of the test is a blood test. It's a finger prick, so it's not a needle, just a finger prick that looks at markers of inflammation and blood sugar handling. So we can objectify does the person's inflammation levels have changed? And then again, we're going to repeat those cognitive online tests. These are standardized tests that are used across industries to quantify if a person has, you know, memory issues. So do they improve on those as well? I mean, that the proof's in the pudding. So we redo it. And typically when a person follows the protocol, they get better.
You know, it's important that people realize that health is in their hands, that they can change virtually anything if they put their focus on what it is that needs to be changed. And when you have somebody like Dr. Browning walking you through the matrix, being able to diagnose and recognize trauma, we talked a little bit about the skull bones. There's 22 of them, and they lock together, so they put pressure on spinal fluid. And that can be problematic in your blood pressure. It can be problematic in functional cognition. And when you have an expert like he is that to be able to diagnose that and to be able to treat that very succinctly, specifically, you have nothing to gain except for everything to come out on the other end of it at a much, much higher and impactful level. Dr. Browning, thank you very much. I'll see you in the office this week at some point after the holiday.
Sounds great.
As always, you know, we do this for one reason only, simply because we love you all. See you next week. Bye.